9 p.m. at the Hollywood Senior Center in Portland. Ken Stringfellow, founding member of the Posies, performs songs from his 30-year career as a musician. This night features songs and stories from his work as a solo artist, as well as Neil Young, Big Star, Robin Hitchcock, and much more. Again, that's an evening with Ken Stringfellow on Saturday, October 19th from 7 to 9 at the Hollywood Senior Center, 1820 Northeast 40th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's so unguided with the hope that someone's reading.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Variety Show Benefit for Pueblo Unido, Saturday, October 19th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Cruise Room Annex in Portland. Pueblo Unido defends immigrants against deportation, connecting clients to legal representation. The Variety Show fundraiser for Pueblo Unido features local artists showcasing a variety of talent, including live musical performances, stand-up comedy, and more. Again, that's the Variety Show Benefit for Pueblo Unido, Saturday, October 19th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Cruise Room Annex, 2338 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 10:01 a.m., time for the radio zine, followed by film at 11, which is at 10:30. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Darian Lehman of WXIR, joined by Ursula Rudenberg of Pacifica Radio Network. We're coming to you from Rochester, New York, the chosen home and final resting place of the famed orator, abolitionist, and media man, Frederick Douglass.
In 1899, Rochester put up a monument to him, the first civic monument ever erected honoring an African American. Later this month, that statue will be moved to a more prominent position as part of an ongoing commemorations process that began last year to mark the 200th anniversary of Douglass's chosen birthday, February 14th, 1818.
Today, we're going to explore the legacy of Frederick Douglass and his relationship to Rochester. Carvin Eisen is here, project manager of the Frederick Douglass Bicentennial Commemoration, re-energizing the legacy of Frederick Douglass. He's a journalism, broadcasting, and public relations professor at the College at Brockport. He's also a filmmaker whose work includes the 2004 documentary July 64 about the urban rebellion that took place here in Rochester, as well as Shadows of the Lynching Tree from 2010. Later, Dr. Ghislaine Radegonde Eisen will also join us. She is the program director of the Frederick Douglass Institute for African American Studies at the University of Rochester. Welcome first to Carvin.
Thank you for having me.
Before Rochester was known as the city of George Eastman and Kodak, and known as Smugtown, USA, a white-collar town of business efficiencies, it was and is the city of Frederick Douglass. Can you talk about Rochester's place in the history of abolitionist and social activism?
It's impossible to put ourselves back in that frame of mind, but the world was different. The reality of life in America, if you were black at the turn of the century, was not pleasant. It was not charitable. It was not welcoming. It was not anything that any one of us in this room or in the sound of my voice would care to participate in. It was harsh. We're spending a lot of time now saying that it wasn't as bad as it was. Oh, it was bad. It was terrible, and the legacy of that extends right up to this moment. So I feel that that's a large part of my responsibility. And first thing I want to say is that this is crucial now. One of the reasons we wanted to re-energize the legacy of Frederick Douglass was not so much to talk about the history, the legacy. Mm-hmm. There are many scholars who spend their life charting what happened in the past, and that's wonderful. But the hour is late now. One of the things that we were interested in was what would Frederick Douglass say now?
Yeah.
How long did Douglass live in Rochester?
Frederick Douglass lived in Rochester for approximately 23 years. He came to Rochester, and I can't remember the exact date, but he came to Rochester because there was something going on here. This is important to know. Professor Rich Newman at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, said that long before this is George Eastman's town, long before that, this is Frederick Douglass's town. And this is Frederick Douglass's town because Rochester was a hotbed of progressive thinking, of social justice issues, of abolitionists were here. Women's suffrage took place here with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott and Susan B. Anthony, of course. This was a place where the Underground Railroad flourished here. This was a place where activity took place. And then something extraordinary happened after Frederick Douglass's death. The desire to produce economy, significant economy, took over, and in the form of George Eastman, for example, and the development of Eastman Kodak and Cybron and Xerox and hundreds of other high-tech companies. People don't know that in the middle of the 20th century, Rochester was in essence the Silicon Valley of this country. This is where high-tech incubated, and as a result of that, a lot of things happened here, a lot of inventions happened here that shaped modern America.
Frederick Douglass started his famous abolitionist paper, The North Star, here, lived here for over 20 years, and he was not only a newspaper man, but he was also the most photographed American of his day. So can you talk about his media savvy, how he used media to attack slavery, why he was a pioneer in that respect?
One of the reasons that Frederick Douglass came to prominence is because Frederick Douglass spoke truth to power. Frederick mm-hmm. Douglass told the truth about abolition. He told the truth about what it was like to be a slave when people had no idea the reality of that condition. If you think back, slaves weren't taught to read for a very good reason. They were not given the tools of literacy because to teach a slave to read would unfit them to be a slave. And Frederick Douglass, while he was born into slavery, he was never holding a slave mentality, the mentality of, oh, I am enslaved, therefore I cannot achieve. He was a brilliant man who used his facility, his mental facility, to get people to teach him the things that he needed to learn. And finally, when he gets to the point of being educated, he goes out on his own. He walks away from slavery and comes north on a train, as a matter of fact, dressed as a sailor, clothes made by his wife, Anna Marie Douglass, who he'll later marry. But he used photography. He used the medium. Frederick Douglass was the most photographed American in the 19th century. Frederick Douglass used media in a way that is exceptional. And you will see there is an extraordinary legacy of images left by Douglass, and he almost never smiles. He almost never smiles because he wants people to know that this is serious business, right? This was the Snapchat, if you will, the media, and he was sending information to those who were still enslaved that here is a man who happens to be black, but he doesn't look like a slave. He doesn't act like a slave. He doesn't don the persona that people come to expect from somebody who is enslaved. So he really addressed a great deal of issues. And then he goes on to write several books. And you could reach out to the Frederick Douglass Family Initiatives if you're interested in finding that book or having a copy of that book.
So in 1899, a few years after Douglass's death, Rochester erected a monument to Frederick Douglass. And it was built at a monument when other cities were building monuments memorializing the Civil War. Talk about the significance of that statue and how that statue became the centerpiece of a public art project that you helped to spearhead last year as part of the bicentennial celebrations.
This is a fabulous question. This is the truth. The first monument erected to honor an African-American citizen is in the city of Rochester. It's in Highland Park right now. It's an extraordinary piece of work built in the classic European tradition of sculpture. And it's erected here, and at the time, the mayor of Rochester, Mayor Warner, said that they wanted it in front of the train station because at that time, train travel was the dominant form of travel. And it was there for a number of years. And they wanted it there because they wanted citizens to see, people who are coming into Rochester, to see that the most illustrious citizen of the community was, in fact, a black man. And this is what the mayor of Rochester said at that time. So it was an important monument. And from the very beginning, this monument served to centralize the community. It served to bring the community together. And 120-something years after his life, that monument is still doing the same work that it was designed to do when it was created. And the story of its creation is fascinating. J. Walter Thompson went to Frederick Douglass about 5 years before Douglass died and said to Douglass, this war memorial that's at Washington Square Park, which is downtown, has no black soldiers in it, perpetuating the story that black people did not participate in the Civil War for their own liberation. So they wanted to create a monument that would essentially correct that miscast history. So, long story short, Douglass says, yes, we're gonna do it. I'm with you, I'll do whatever I can, we'll raise money. But in the interim, Douglass died. So J. Walter Thompson then goes on a mission to erect a monument about Douglass. And that is the monument that we end up with. And from the beginning, it centralized our community, it brought our community together at a time when monuments constructed to reinforce the Confederacy and to reinforce order, right? Because that's really what that's about. What's memorialized reinforces a certain order, right? So while monuments, right up to this day, Heather Hare dies in Charlottesville because of a monument. So while the country is struggling with what to memorialize, this monument has brought people together and continues to. As a result, in our Re-Energize the Legacy of Frederick Douglass campaign, which was the bicentennial celebration of his life, we put 13 replica monuments about Douglass, patterned on that monument around the city. They're there all over the place. People go and take pictures with them. It makes me feel so good to see families and people photographing and holding his hands and all of that stuff. It centralizes our community. I got to tell you, it wasn't that everything was great. It started out great. It was wonderful. Everybody bought in. Over 100 arts organizations, nonprofits, educational institutions, government agencies, state, county, and local. And then something terrible happened. Actually, December 18th, 2018, two students from an area college claimed to be drunk, and they destroyed one of our monuments. And this was a moment in local history that rippled out across the nation, actually, and over into Europe. There were over 300 news stories filed about this act of desecration. And the community was in an uproar. It was unbelievable. It questioned the criminal justice system because these two young men who desecrated this monument happened to be white. And right from the beginning, we saw the separation, the stratification in the criminal justice system. We saw it in action right away, instantly. It went bad, and then it went good again. Everybody came out and the community rallied around it, and one monument went down, and 10 monuments came back in its place.
That's right.
metaphor.
Well, Carvin, we want to ask you a little bit more about the site where that statue is located and about some of the other sites where these statues are located around town. But let me just reintroduce the show. You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. My name is Darian Lehman from WXIR, Rochester, New York, the city Frederick Douglass called home for over 20 years. Ursula Rudenberg of Pacifica Radio Network is co-hosting today's show, and we're speaking with Carvin Eisen. He's project manager of the Frederick Douglass Bicentennial Commemoration, re-energizing the legacy of Frederick Douglass. Carvin, you just described the public art project associated with re-energizing the legacy of Frederick Douglass, where statues based on that 1899 original have been placed around town at sites of significance to his life and legacy. So can you just give us a sense of some of those places that have special significance for you? Describe why they were significant to Douglass and his work.
At the base of each monument is a QR code. And if you have your cell phone or whatever device you have, you can go to the website douglasstour.com. It will take you right there, and it will tell you why that monument is in that location. And I have to tell you, that makes me so excited because technology never works. I mean, you all know that. It never works. And I found it hard to believe that that was going to get us to what we wanted, because it's very expensive to embed chips in the replica monuments and have them work. But there are some locations that I think are extraordinary and important to highlight. One is the one I talked about at Washington Square Park, because we end up putting a monument of Frederick Douglass in the park that didn't have the black soldiers. And in some poetic justice, we close that circle. And I'm very just excited about that monument because we were able to close that loop. Another one that's very important is the one on Seward Street, where the Seward Academy was, where these two young men ultimately destroyed the monument. This monument is significant because Frederick Douglass sent his daughter Rosetta to school there, a private girls' school academy. And Mr. Douglass comes to find out that the school has segregated his daughter in a back room, and she is unable to participate with the other students in the class, all girls' school. When Mr. Douglass finds this out, no one can write righteous indignation better than Frederick Douglass.
That's right.
So Mr. Douglass came in, and you can be sure this was straightened out. And he ends up taking her out of the school and basically helping to start the public school system. But this is extraordinary because 171 years later, an act of metaphoric desecration takes place again at that same location. So I just have this idea about the memory of place, where that place remembered that event, and then that event replicates itself, and then it reignites and sets our community into motion again a second time. That's an important one. And the one at Hochstein School of Music is important. They're all important, but the one at Hochstein is where Mr. Douglass's funeral was, where 2,000 Rochesterians and Americans from all over the place came to memorialize and to say goodbye to this extraordinary man. It is still hard for me to fathom, coming from such humble beginnings where you don't know who your mother is, you don't know what your birthday is, you don't know anything about yourself, but yet you rise up to a position to have impact on this country and impact on the consciousness and the psyche of this nation that is felt to this day. And I have to tell you this last thing. Just 3 days ago, I'm deeper into this than any film I ever made. But we just buried a time capsule that will be opened in 200 years. I can't even get my head around that. That 200 years, if it survives, nothing, you know, catastrophic happens, that people will read what several people wrote, people like the mayor of Rochester, who characterizes her city, being the first black female mayor of this town, following the first black mayor, which was inconceivable during Douglass's time. The college at Brockport president, Heidi McPherson, wrote a letter so beautiful and so passionate about what she hopes for the future, that she hopes that education is still taking place. Dr. David Anderson writes, David Sankofa Anderson, who channels Frederick Douglass, wrote a lot. We had children in grade school write letters to him in the future. Ken Morris Jr., his three times great grandson, whose hands, if you ever see the monument, it is his hands that were modeled to create the hands of Douglass, so to bring the monument forward. So there's so many, many wonderful letters. And my lovely wife, Ghislaine, wrote a letter as well, talking about our son and our poodle and our and our home and our life and the significance of all of that. So it was just an incredible project that invigorated our city, and I hope it will continue to do that.
And that time capsule will be buried underneath the new location for the original Douglass statue, which should be moved sometime soon and will be the culminating or closing event of this bicentennial, right?
Absolutely. At the end of this month, there's going to be an opening and a closing at the same time. This monument that's in Highland Park was placed there in 1941 after it was moved from its original location at the train station I talked about earlier. But it's in a place where nobody can really ever see it. They're moving it from its position down in a bowl to the corner of Robinson Drive and South Avenue, a major thoroughfare, which is about maybe less than a quarter of a mile from where Frederick Douglass's home was when he lived here in Rochester. So that's a big deal. And the time capsule is buried inside there. It's already in there.
Did you put it on a flash drive?
Actually, there are a couple of flash drives in there, and that's like, you know, I don't know what to even think about that. What will people know about a flash drive in 200 years from now? You'll probably just get it plugged into your head, or, you know, you'll be born with that information or whatever, or there won't be any technology available to play back that information. But what we assumed is that we still will have written word. Can we assume that we'll have that? Will we still have low power FM, do you think?
Ghislaine Radiganda Eisen is the project manager of the Frederick Douglass Institute for African American Studies at the University of Rochester, where a descendant of Frederick Douglass recently came to speak. Welcome, Ghislaine. Tell us briefly, what is the Frederick Douglass Institute for African American Studies?
So the Frederick Douglass Institute for African American Studies has a really broad mandate in undergraduate and graduate education. And it has been established in 1987 to really promote the African and African American studies through undergraduate and graduate research. We have a programming that really try to always keep in mind an acute awareness of the civic engagement that traces all the way from the great abolitionists. And programming really engages all the faculty and the students from all the college because of this multidisciplinary aspect to it. And we also have a two icon speaker series. And this two icon speaker series is a collaboration between the Frederick Douglass Institute for African and African American Studies and the Women's Studies, the Susan B. Anthony for Women and Sexuality and Gender Studies. And every year we invite a speaker whose research is at the intersection of race and gender to come and talk about their specific research.
You recently had a descendant of Frederick Douglass come and speak. Tell us a little bit about what he talked about.
Yeah. Last year, for the bicentennial of the commemoration of Frederick Douglass' birth, we were looking for a speaker who would really be representative of the vision that we have and how we like to promote African-American studies. So we automatically thought about Ken Morris, who is three-time the great-grandson of Frederick Douglass and at the same time two times of the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. And he's also the co-founder of the Frederick Douglass Family Initiative. And through his organization, he's trying to end modern slavery and human trafficking. So we invited him to talk about his work, and he made a presentation called 1 Million Abolitionists, And through his presentation, he gave us a brilliant piece of history on how he carries the legacy of Frederick Douglass, but also how it is important that we carry the legacy of Frederick Douglass. And through his project, he's trying to really create 1 million abolitionists and try to engage students and individuals to really voice all the issues, to be civically engaged. He's distributing the biography of Frederick Douglass. And through his books, he's educating students about the very existence, because this is a piece of history that a lot of people ignore and are not aware of. And
it sounds like he's saying that slavery is still a problem today.
Absolutely, and it is a very prevalent issue through human trafficking that is present in our community. He's trying to raise awareness on this issue and educating everyone so we can take action.
Thank you.
Well, we're just about out of time for this episode of Sprouts, but Carvin, you started off today by talking about what Frederick Douglass would do in the present, and so much of your work as a filmmaker has dealt with the legacy of slavery and institutional racism. I mean, what would Frederick Douglass be working on today? What would he say at this very late hour?
I can only go by how he lived his life and how he spoke truth to power. And I would have to believe that he would use his intellectual ability, he would use his communication and oratory skills to point to problems that plague our nation. And the problem that plagues our nation right now is the balance of our democracy, the balance of our republic. And this is something that I have to believe that Douglass and all true believing patriots have to be concerned about in the environment that we're in right now. What would Frederick Douglass say now about the President of the United States holding Nuremberg-style rallies in America? Is that something that you agree with? I personally don't agree with it, and I'm going to do everything I can to channel Frederick Douglass, because I believe those are the kind of things that Frederick Douglass would talk about. This is crucial now. The hour is late. And you can say that these things don't happen here, right? Cut back to the Weimar Republic. People say, oh, it could never happen. Totalitarianism could never happen. But all it takes is people to turn their eyes away, to turn their back on what they see happening before them. And I think that Frederick Douglass was a person who never did that, right? Mm-hmm. To walk away from slavery under pressure of being killed. Do you know, if they had caught Frederick Douglass, because Frederick Douglass was connected with John Brown before John Brown and Harper's Ferry, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, because he would have been executed. So he spoke truth to power then, and I think that that gives me, I can't speak for everybody else, it gives me the courage to stand for my convictions, to make films that people don't want to see. I made a film called Shadows of the Lynching Tree, and it's only one of two films in America that takes on the question of lynching head on. And this is what Douglass was concerned about at the end of his life. The idea that the loss of control that was instituted through slavery was now morphing into law enforcement and the illegal act of lynching a person. And this happened in America, right? So we have to talk about it. So I believe that he would probably be talking about those kinds of things. He would be attempting to empower people. He would empower us. I believe he would try to have a show on some low-power radio station, because they wouldn't bring him on a commercial radio station, because he would be talking so much stuff. They would just, you know, not be able to entertain that. But he would use the media. And this is why, ultimately, we are all here, to use the media, right? To create a dual thoroughfare, not a one-way street where just corporate information is passed down to us in the form of anesthetizing us to purchase something, right? That's all good, it's okay, it moves the economy, but there's so much more. There's so much more. The value systems that have been that we continue to perfect. We're not perfect, but we continue to become more perfect. And I think that's what he would talk about if he were here.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much, Carvin Eisen and Dr. Ghislaine Radegonde Eisen, for being with us today. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to The Legacy of Frederick Douglass and the City of Rochester, New York. This edition of Sprouts was recorded at the Grassroots Radio Conference in Rochester, New York, in front of a live audience. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula, that's U-R-S-U-L-A, at pacifica.org. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. I'm Darian Lehman from WXIR in Rochester, New York. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Thank you to Sprouts for providing that to KBOO Portland, your community radio. Coming up next is Film at 11, which of course starts at 10:30. Speaking of which, I now get to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Darkside Cinema. Open every night featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com.
Okay, and welcome to a very special episode of Film 11. My name is DK Holm, of course, and I'm here with our impetuous co-host, Mona.
Impetuous. I'll take it.
I don't even know what that word means. But we're going to talk about Alien for half an hour.
And in relation to the spirit of Halloween, we wanted to talk